Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Now to reports this morning that 12 Palestinians have been killed and several others injured in an Israeli strike targeting a school housing displaced people in Khan Yunis. The aid distribution centres run by the US Israeli-backed Gaza Humanitarian Fund will be closed today after at least 27 Palestinians were killed by Israeli fire near a centre yesterday. The Israeli military has warned that roads leading to the sites will be considered combat zones. Well, for more, we're joined firstly on the line by Sukundar Kamani, who is foreign affairs correspondent with Channel 4 News. Sukundar, thanks for joining us this morning. First to the reports about that strike in Khan Yunis. What we're hearing is that tents housing displaced families recently told to move to this area. Tents were inside the schools, that's what reports are saying, and they were hit. What have you heard?
Well, we've seen this as a repeated tactic by the Israeli military, launching airstrikes, drone strikes on schools turned shelters. Of course, the vast majority of the Palestinian population in Gaza is displaced, has been displaced multiple times. And so, yes, we're getting reports in the last few hours there was an airstrike on a school west of the southern city of Khan Yunis. The latest death toll we hear is at least 18 people. That could well increase, unfortunately, and the victims are said to include children. No further details as of yet, but we'll expect more in the coming mm-hmm. hours on that. Of course, you know, if you're living in Gaza now, you're facing these twin dangers of strikes from the air from the Israeli military and starvation because of the lack of food that has been allowed and aid that's been allowed into the territory.
And this Gaza Humanitarian Foundation operation, that's been suspended today. And the roads leading to those very limited centres that were open in the last couple of days, they're going to be considered combat zones now.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, this US-backed Gaza Humanitarian Foundation has been, you know, very, very heavily criticized by the UN, by aid agencies. You know, one UN spokesman saying that the planning around it looked like it was going to be a disaster, and that's exactly what's materialized. We've seen in the last few days repeated incidents where numerous Palestinians queuing desperately to try and get aid were killed. The Israeli military, in initially having denied involvement in that yesterday, they admitted that they did fire shots and were investigating the incident. It seems what happened is that the situation on the ground is utterly chaotic, and that huge numbers of people gather. They then try and mass and make their way towards these aid depots, and that's when Israeli soldiers open fire on them. Yesterday's death toll was at least 27 people being killed. Today, it's been announced that, as you say, the GHF, the Gaza Humanitarian Fund, will not be operating while it's carrying out what it says are efficiency improvements. But you've got calls from, you know, right across the aid spectrum, calling for it to be abolished and for the system that was in place before, that was led by the UN, to be reinstated. You know, you hear time and time again from aid agencies, there's no need to reinvent the wheel, especially mm-hmm. at a time of crisis when, you know, the entire 2 million population of Gaza is at risk of famine.
But we're also hearing that people may have been unaware of this decision to suspend operations today, could be on their way, because many people are making very long journeys to try and get some of this aid, and they could be in these areas, on these roads, considered by the IDF to be combat zones now.
It's possible. I mean, I think people in Gaza are paying close attention to the announcements from the Israeli military, because those announcements, you know, literally mean life or death to them. But of course, it is quite possible that some people will not have received that message, or may have just out of sheer desperation be heading towards there anyway. No reports as of yet of casualties along those roads, but that's certainly something to monitor. There's going to also be, I mean, one final thing to mm-hmm. note, really, is there's going to be a UN Security Council vote calling for the reinstatement of unfettered access for humanitarian groups and UN aid agencies into Gaza and for a ceasefire and the release of hostages later today. But let's see if that's vetoed by the US.
Well, yeah. And I mean, it's we haven't had a vote like that since last November. And you wonder, given, you know, the veto, the United States veto, but also, you know, even if it were to be passed, what likely impact could it have?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, well, I think certainly if, you know, the decision the US makes on whether to abstain or to use its veto power will be significant. We've seen a hardening in the tone coming out from Britain and France in their criticism of Israel, even if critics say that hasn't been matched by changes in policy in terms of taking action against Israel for its conduct in Gaza. You know, but it's the US that's Israel's key ally, and what President Trump and his administration say that will really determine what Israel does. And they are the ones who exert the most amount of leverage. And so that would, the US position today, I think, will be a good, useful indicator of whether there is a growing frustration within President Trump's administration about Israel's behavior, or whether they're content to see it carry on as is.
Sukhandar, thank you very much for joining us this morning. Sukhandar Kamani there, foreign affairs correspondent with Channel 4 News. And I'm joined on the line now by James Elder of UNICEF. And James is in Gaza this morning, having arrived last night. James, thanks for being with us and good morning to you.
Claire, hi there. Good morning.
So we have reports of further strikes in southern Gaza overnight. Can you give us a general overview of the situation there where you are?
Look, it's a mix of very, very hungry people. I'm back to that sense of driving through any area and there are people everywhere and it's hand to mouth, tapping on windows. I was having teenage boys in tears, Claire, tapping on the window, just showing, please, any food, any food. And then, yes, I'm hearing a lot of strikes. I'm not far. I was meant to be trying to get to Derry Bella, to the Al-Aqsa Hospital now, and I'm told reports of a drone strike there on the hospital. So it's the same. It's the same denials of food. Enforced starvation and then people being bombed whilst they try to hide somewhere. It's unfortunately just a continued deterioration for people whose coping mechanisms are smashed, but who continue to be denied the most basic humanitarian food and are seeing bombardments from the sky.
And those aid distribution centres, which were run by the US and the Israelis, and listen, they've had huge problems since they started operating, but they're closed today completely, are they?
Yes, exactly. They are. And it's a real problem for, in a sense, whatever food comes in, some people would say it's useful. The problem there, of course, was that there have been two or three incidents where civilians have been massacred whilst trying to get food. Now, no one knew of this, the closure of it, Claire. So we're talking about people going 10, 15 miles. I was going past them yesterday evening on a coastal road. People go south. No one had any sense of that. And then, of course, today, suddenly you're hearing the IDF saying that those roads leading to the sites will be considered combat zones. Now, contradictory messages in a war zone lead to people getting killed. Of course, though, the meager amount of food they're giving out, that's not the problem, that closure there. The problem is the United Nations and so many of the brave partners on the ground, them not being allowed to get food in, them not being allowed to get the nutritions in, the incubators in, the medicines in. So we're back to that sense. I mean, this Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, Claire, to be very clear, is a pretense of aid. It's a distraction from the real situation on the ground by claiming they're giving sufficient aid to people. We are not in any way, shape or form a single-digit percentage of that. They force people to the south, and it's an attempt to ease international pressure around starvation. But it's a veneer, and it's circumventing a very effective aid system. But that very effective aid system during the ceasefire was 500-600 trucks a day and 400 distribution points. This is a number of pallets, and it's two distribution points. I mean, I was getting information from those people who were going there, people actually who made it there, saying that there were, you know, thousands or even tens of thousands of people in three pallets of boxes, enough for a few hundred. It was explained to me as being like the Hunger Games. Boxes were snatched and then there was gunfire from a quadcopter. So it's militarizing aid, it's politicizing aid. Aid is done as it's been done for decades in very difficult environments by aid workers who do it in a dignified manner and who go to where people need it, to where women, the elderly, children, the sick, the amputated, where they need it.
Is there any movement when it comes to Israel and the UN? Is there any negotiation ongoing around resuming, as you say, the effective aid system that was there previously run by the UN?
Constant negotiations, and an organization like UNICEF, we still get some trucks in. I'll be in a convoy going to the north in a few days with nutritional food, with baby powder, with milk and so on, and vaccines. It's just not enough. It's literally a fraction of what we need, and we've got hundreds of trucks on the border. So the negotiations are endless, but it is difficult, Claire, because I think, you know, you've got a sense now where the line constantly is that there's aid diversion, and the response is going to show us the proof. I mean, we've now got a US ambassador who ran the humanitarian effort under President Biden saying that there's never been evidence provided, that Hamas was stealing the majority of aid. It's just, so it's so simple. So we are dealing still with falsehoods and basically without evidence. It's designed to discredit a system and therefore, as I say, justify this weaponizing and displacing of a population. So it's very hard to have good faith negotiations when that's the case. And when we are allowed to bring in aid, you know, you've had denials of aid for 2 months, you've had destruction of a police force, devastation of a society, and then you're told, there you are, there is one route. That is the creation of circumstances for looting by a desperate population to take place.
What can you do there now, as you stand in Gaza?
So I sat with colleagues this morning. We're doing a lot of child reintegration. We're getting children back who've been displaced. We still do a lot of mental health support. We still have a whole range of clinics on the ground that we support with vaccines. Our drug supply is very, very low. Nutritional supplies we got in, but we know it's not nearly enough because we are seeing a daily multiplication in nutritional cases. And we're somehow keeping the water system that's still supplying around water to 500,000 people going, but we are desperately low of fuel to do that. So UNICEF's mandate is so vast, Claire, and so we're doing parts of all of that, but it's parts. It's 10% here, it's 30% there for a population that is on their knees. It's very strange to be back again. You know, there's a real sadness in seeing familiar faces that are strewn with desperation and they're gaunt. You see hunger in people. It's very clear. People try to hide that despair and the desperation, but it's plainly evident.
And also the people who, you know, the population are relying on to help them are hungry and depleted as well, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm talking because I only got in last night. Most people I'm seeing are colleagues, are you know, United Nations staff, who everyone to a person will say, look, the hardest thing is just the lack of food. I just spoke to one of our child protection staff members, Palestinian, and she has not eaten for four meals, not eaten since dinner two nights ago because she's giving her food to her children. These are people, highly educated people who know very well the damage to their children physically, but mentally, long-term damage of this denial, this deprivation of nutrition, and the idea that we still have to somehow justify, and that's where this game gets really quite wicked, that we know what the denials will do. We know so clearly that starvation as a weapon of war is prevented under every element of international humanitarian law. And we are seeing a replacement aid system brought in that is not there to try and get the nutritional level to civilians who need it. It is there to reduce pressure from the international community so the carnage of children can continue.
And I read yesterday, or last week rather, the irony of this is that there are people eating in luxury restaurants just miles away from where you are.
Yeah, I mean, I came through Amman and through Israel, and, you know, it struck me just before I got to the fence, just before, Claire, I got, you know, half a mile less, hundreds of yards, there were picnic benches, you know, you're surrounded by eucalyptus tree and picnic benches, and then you come into this wasteland, then you come into this desperate land, and then suddenly, as people see vehicles, you know, you see thousands of people approach. Now, of course, we're just in armored vehicles, they know we have no food, and then it's that universal symbol of gaunt faces and hand to mouth.
Well, James, thank you for taking the time to talk to us as you arrive back in Gaza, and take care. We'll speak to you soon.
Thanks so much.
James Elder there, who's the UNICEF Gaza spokesperson, who is back in Gaza this morning.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.